The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast with zero fucks to give. You're listening to The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast that's more fluff and less content. My name's John Bruford. I'm one of your hosts. I'm joined by my hirsute, but less hirsute than normal, co-host, Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
John's referring to my haircut, by the way.
Audio, but we use video so that we can see each other. And Fintan had such a mop chop, you wouldn't believe. He's cut off more hair off his head than I've ever had on my head. You had all my hair up. Ever.
I took a photo after the haircut. It looks like there's a small animal dead on the floor. It's absolutely hilarious.
Can I ask a slightly personal question? Were you raised Catholic?
I was.
Were you not tempted to make a hair shirt and hair trousers, possibly a hair jacket and a hair waistcoat with it?
I could. If I could make money from it, I would.
Some hair socks. Somebody out there would want to buy it.
I know.
Speaking about wanting to buy old rope, have we got any sponsors?
A lot's happened on that front. We will have big news over the next couple of weeks.
Oh, will we?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
It's all very exciting.
Is that the one that I know about or the one that I also know about?
You should know about both of them.
Yes. I know about one of them, definitely.
It's all happening.
There's one that's definitely happening.
Yes.
But it's the other one. The other one's not definitely happening.
99%. We're just waiting for somebody to come back from holidays.
Well, there's the potential for, you know, sponsors if anybody's. We could have a hair sponsor and a hairless sponsor. Essentially, a personal sponsor for you and a personal sponsor for my slappy forehead. I've said this before. If we get a sponsor, I will put their information on my forehead and we'll do video.
That is true. That is true.
I've got like a fucking high-def camera and all sorts on here now. Is that work? Yeah, that's working. You can see every pimple.
Pore, so I can.
Oh, it's just... Oof. You should get if I'm using a good camera, you should get a less good monitor.
Because it's huge.
Balance it out a bit. It is 2023.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty exciting. Did you make any New Year's resolutions?
I did. I normally don't. I'm actually normally very anti New Year's and New Year's resolutions.
That was very topical. I like what you did there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It makes me sad. I'm really grumpy about it, but like, I'm not a big New Year's person. I don't really care about the calendar changing.
It's an arbitrary line, isn't it? But people like a marker.
Yeah, and I get why people enjoy it. It's just not for me. So normally I don't do, like, you know, if you look at New Year's resolutions, right? This is the worst time of year to go on a diet, right? This is the worst time of the year to go out running or do some like outdoor sports, right? It sucks, right? The summertime's a way better time to start those things. So there's just on a practical level, but I try and do goal setting like two or three times a year, like a really big one, and then maybe like some top-up stuff, and it doesn't really coincide. It's more like when I'm on holidays and I've got a bit of time to think. I started doing it about 8 years ago properly, and I did one of those it sounds really wanky, but I did one of those like Tony Robbins books. Very American, very over the top, but if you actually do the exercises, once you get past all the bullshit, once you actually do the exercises, there's some really good like questions and things to think about and stuff. So what I kind of boiled it down to was I've got three areas I focus on. So I've got my family, you know, so how can I be a great dad? How can I be a great husband, a great partner? Work. So what are the things I want to achieve in work? and then kind of health and fitness. So, which typically is like races or things I want to do in that space. So Christmas was the first, I was going to say the first bit of time off I've had all year, but obviously I had the massive holiday in Australia. sorry, before I break out the tiny violins about how hard my year was. So it was the first bit of thinking time I've had in a while. So I've made some training goals. So my big one is I'm going to be doing UTMB Snowdonia in mid-May. So my training for that starts officially on Monday. So that's 50 kilometers with 3,000 meters of climbing, 3,000 meters of descending. So basically it's running uphill and then running downhill.
It's proper hilly. Well, you might say mountainous.
Yeah.
Your CrossFit will help you with that as well, because you'll need to carry all the fucking swag that you buy at the end of the race.
So I'm dialing back the CrossFit because it really messes with the long distance running training. So if I've been doing deadlifts on a Thursday, going for a long run on a Friday is an absolute nightmare.
You could always do your deadlifts on a Wednesday though.
Yeah, but with the CrossFit, you just show up and you just do whatever they give you. You don't get to pick and choose.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah, so it's and then it's there was also like
see that is the problem with the way that modern shit works.
No,
the assumption that you're not doing anything else.
Yeah, but for a lot of people that'd be enough, right? So what I've done instead is one of the things I did in November. So I kind of always try and do myself a fitness challenge in November for my birthday. Was I did really basic, 4 sets of 10. So it was push-ups, 2 types of sit-ups, kettlebell swings, bent over rows, goblet squats. And that was it, right? But I had to do it every day. So if I was really slow, it's like 20 minutes. If I powered through it, it's like 12 minutes, right? So very, very straightforward, but you had to do it every day. I got more out of that than anything else. That was I've cleared out I spent a bit of time over the holidays. So I cleared out the basement. I'm getting a pull-up bar installed and I'm just going to set up a little mini gym. Not a mini gym. It's like a pull-up bar and a kettlebell and a TRX thing. And I'm going to just do that kind of like 25 minute routine every day. And that's going to be my strength. And then you just make it harder. So, you know, the push-ups could be slower or put a weight vest on or incline or whatever you want to do.
There's lots of different kinds of movements you can do within an exercise to complicate it.
So I've been reading the Kilian Jornet, the ultra runner. He's got a book. He's co-authoring a book called The Uphill Athlete. Mm-hmm. And that's got some really good strength training. So like box step-ups and jumping lunges and these kind of things. Because the problem for the training for Snowdonia is, so basically I've got to do a lot of treadmill running, and that's mm-hmm. fine for uphill, but that doesn't give you the pounding on the downhill that you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I need to do a ton of like box step ups and weighted lunges or jumping weighted lunges and stuff like that. So I've kind of got a whole plan for that plan. So that's my fitness thing. The other part of the
fitness. Can I just throw in there as well? I don't know if Kilian will have these, but I was doing these with my leg rebuilding routine. It's a triphasic Bulgarian split squat.
Triphasic just means slow?
No, it means that it incorporates all three states that the muscle can possibly encounter. So okay. Your muscles have three states, and I can't remember what they are. The static, eccentric, and the other one.
Concentric?
Maybe, I don't know. So, you know, you can have extended, imagine the bicep extended and still, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you think of a lunge,
mm-hmm.
you've got the process of going down into the lunge, the hold, and then a push back up,
mm-hmm.
right? If you did it in a triphasic way, you would go down into the lunge, but if you stop at the bottom, you're relaxed, you're not doing anything. You actually want the point at which there's tension.
Mm-hmm.
So then you come back up an inch and you hold. And then you fast twitch out of it.
Okay.
But with a Bulgarian split squat, that is considerably harder. You might do, say, a count of 8 or 10 to come down into the split squat. And then you do the hold, and then you burst out of it. And if you can do 5 of those, you're already in good shape.
Oh, so these Bulgarian split squats where you've got your foot up on something, your back foot is elevated.
Yep.
Got it.
So you can, but you can introduce a triphasic concept to just about anything. I mean, you could put it into a press up.
Exactly.
And it makes it, you can actually take a very simple set of movements and make a surprisingly complete workout.
Which is what I was doing with this December or November thing, because I was just, it was low reps, but then I was using heavy weight. So it's like a 30 kilo kettlebell. So you feel it, but you also recover really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do it every day kind of thing, which was really interesting. So part of this as well is I really, 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 really want to be able to do a pull-up. I've never been able to do a pull-up, which is ridiculous. So the getting the pull-up bar installed, and then I've got a progression plan for using like a TRX kind of rings kind of thing to build up to a pull-up. So that's
a great kit. But do you know what? You beat yourself up about not being able to do a pull-up. I have done pull-ups. I'm not sure I could do one now, but I'd be willing to bet that the percentage of adults of your age that could do a pull-up would be very small, single digits.
Yeah, like, and I'm fine with that. It's just
everybody should be able to, I've been accused of being snobby about this in the past, but I do sincerely believe that everybody should be able to shift their weight.
Yeah. So I can do that. And that's the thing. Like, I can do push-ups, no problems. I can squat for like ever. Not a problem.
Can you do para-style push-ups, sir?
What's a para-style push-up?
It's where you do a handstand and you do a press-up.
No, I can't do a handstand push-up.
They're fucking brutal.
I could do an elevated, so I could put my feet up onto something and do, like, my shoulders are fine from that perspective.
I could do that. I put my feet up on my socks.
I can put, that's the thing. I've got the pushing strength. I've got the squatting. I just don't have the pulling. It's basically the one that's missing.
Finton can't pull.
Finton can't pull.
Good news for Mrs. Costello.
Fucking she. She'd only have pity for her. Disappointing more than one moment. Oh my God.
Life goals.
So that's the fitness one. Long story behind that. The family one. It was something I read years ago. And it was basically, it was a really sad story. It was this family, young family, and the mum was diagnosed with terminal cancer. All right, so really, really awful stuff, right? Stuff and nightmares. And the cancer charity that was part of the article had sent in a specialist kind of nurse/psychologist to help the family, because the kids were like 5 and 6 kind of thing. And what the nurse or this expert said, and kind of worked with the family over the 6 or 9 months that the mother had left, was about creating memories, right? So lots of photographs, doing things as a family, and just really focusing on creating great memories and then documenting that. And then the kids could look back on it as with the father over time. So even now I'm kind of fucking choking up even talking about it. And I was kind of sitting there reading there going like, God, we should just do that anyway. Like, why? That's a really good idea of just doing that anyway and not waiting for such an awful thing to happen to kind of spur you into action. So one of my things, and it's kind of a recurring one, is, and it sounds really mechanical when I say it out loud, but like every quarter, recreate happy family memories. So I've got to plan 2 or 3 things to do as a family, or me and my son, or me and my wife, or whatever, where we just go create those happy memories. And it could just be like, I don't know, we have a board game day, or we go watch a good movie or we go somewhere. Well, whatever. It doesn't really matter what it is. It's just being very, very deliberate about doing stuff as a family. Because I think as a family, we're quite introverted and we'd quite all happily sit on our laptops doing whatever we're doing on our laptops. So just really making sure that we do stuff and do those kind of happy things is a big one. And then my son's going to be starting secondary school next school year. So the Dutch system, there's a lot of like open days and a lot of stuff that's going to be happening over the next couple of months to look at the different schools. Cause you have to put your top 10 list and in order preference. Cause it's a, particularly in Amsterdam, it's a lottery system. So, you know, making sure or helping him pick the right school for him is kind of a big one for this next couple of months as well. It's a huge, huge transition time for a young man. And then the work stuff, just the usual boring work stuff and bits and pieces like that, which, yeah, we'll do that. So that's pretty much me.
Crikey.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that much depth, I've got to be honest.
You really thought about it, Fintan.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, though. It's really good to do, like, putting down kind of big goals like that, I think, is really good to do, because we overestimate what we can do in the short term. So like this is the problem, like with New Year's resolutions, right? We overestimate what we can do in January.
Yeah, try and do everything at once.
But we underestimate what we can actually achieve in 2023. And these kind of, like I do this, you know, very regularly. And when I look back, okay, maybe some of the stuff that took longer than I expected, but like I typically get everything done on the list.
Do you know though, right? I was reading a little article by Professor Mark Griffiths about resolutions.
Mm.
And he highlights the main reason why people fuck them up so badly usually, which is that they try and do everything at once.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with making a resolution, but it needs to be something that is quantifiable and where progress is measurable. If it's something about, you know, if it's something that progress is not an individual event. And so, you know, if you think about it, people would benefit massively. So say, for example, you wanted to lose a bit of weight and you wanted to quit smoking and you wanted to drink less, right? Hmm. If you tackle those in the right order, you'll fucking kill them. But if you try and do them all together, you're constantly going to be assailed by these different forces.
If you try to do them all together in January, yeah, which for cold, most of the world is like the worst month of the year, right? You're broke after Christmas. The weather's the worst it could possibly be.
I was broke before Christmas as well.
You're pretty consistent just to be on that. Fair. But you know what I mean? Like there's, you know, the summertime's a great time to go on a diet.
But if you think about resilience as a learned trait, and the one of those, say we take those three goals, the one of those that is the simplest to see progress on in terms of visually see progress and get positive feedback from those around you is losing weight, right? There's lots of different ways to lose weight, and some of them work long term and some of them don't. But, you know, if you start doing that and you start plugging away at it, you'll probably naturally start drinking less anyway, because those two are kind of tied as well. And then you come 3-4 months down the line and you realize you've stuck at it and you've made new habits and you've changed how you eat and you've changed what you eat. By the time you come to smoking, you've learned that you can kick the shit out of just about anything.
But it's also a domino, though. I'd look at those three as a slightly different. If you stop the alcohol, you're probably going to smoke less, because for a lot of people, they smoke when they drink. There's a lot of casual smokers. If you're not hungover, you're less likely to eat rubbish the next day. And you also get a huge, like, alcohol's massively calorific. So it's actually a huge diet aid of just not drinking alcohol. So I would literally start with, and this is what I ended up doing. I started with like, okay, I'll stop drinking alcohol. And the positive impact of that then made the diet as the next one a much easier second step.
So I quit. Let me just work this out first. I think drugs went first. And then it was caffeine. And then alcohol.
You quit caffeine before alcohol? Holy shit.
Yeah. No, caffeine, cigarettes, alcohol, and then sugar. And quitting them in that order has made it possible for me to also give up exercise.
But I'm just...
So that's gone really well. But actually, quitting coffee first made quitting smoking easier because coffee and cigarettes is just absolutely mired together in my consciousness. I do still dream about sitting and having a packet of cigarettes and a pot of coffee.
I could imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the little luxuries that keep life interesting, and I don't have any luxuries anymore, so life isn't interesting.
I don't think I could give up caffeine. I don't think that's... I cut back massively.
I didn't think I could either, but then I had to because I started having a physical reaction to it.
Oh, that's different.
Looking back, I can see now how that happened. Is a friend bought me you know, those stovetop pots that makes espresso. Bought me one of those, but bought me a really big one.
So you're just drinking jugs of espresso.
And I had this like pint Spider-Man mug, and it filled it perfectly. So I'd start the day with a pint of espresso.
I made the same mistake years ago when I was in college. I couldn't understand why I was getting heart palpitations.
Yeah, I was working on a consumer title. And so we were doing a 164-page magazine every 4 weeks, which is, you know, I mean, it's difficult at the best of times. That if I didn't start my day like that, my day wasn't starting, basically. But I wouldn't go back to it now. I love making coffee for other people because I do love the smell. Mm.
You can get good decafs.
Decaf, this is really important distinction. Decaf has loads of caffeine in.
Does it?
If you're intolerant of caffeine, it's got enough to properly fuck you up.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
There's a big difference between caffeine-free and decaffeinated. Decaffeinating doesn't take all the caffeine out by a long stretch. And I do mean there is a surprisingly large amount still in there. I read many years ago, probably two or three decades ago, that somebody had found, and I mean found growing in the wild, a coffee bean which innately lacked caffeine. But I've never seen anything else about it since. If I could get that, I would be the happiest pig in Toy Town. That'd be good. An actual caffeine-free coffee would be something special. Because coffee is a wonderfully complex drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the alternatives are shite.
I agree.
So we were going to have a talk about something else, which is to do with gambling, but...
Go on then.
Hang on a second. I'm going to tell you my resolutions. You haven't asked, but I'm going to tell you them.
What's your resolutions, John?
That's a great question, Fintan, and I'm glad you asked. I didn't make any.
Good for you.
I do my goal setting over 50 times a year. Every week I say to myself, you've just got to get to next week. It's like I once read that running is a controlled fall. And my life is essentially a controlled fall. It's not very well controlled. It's not always under control, but it is. I am always falling.
Literally.
It's going well.
Yeah.
But we were going to talk about Ohio, but I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking already. And I, as a rival podcast has noted, Fintan, some other podcasts out there are more content, less waffle.
Boo. Sounds boring to me.
I think we're closing in on the waffle record.
No, we're not. We're not even close to the waffle record.
Oh, we're not even close to our waffle record. Not on this episode.
But we timestamp stuff. People can skip it and go straight to the good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's listening to this.
I disagree. The stats would suggest otherwise, but that's okay.
Well, luckily, the stats don't show us what people jump to.
No. Well, no, not on, yeah, sort of. They should, but they don't. You're right.
So, Ohio opened as a betting place. Stop me if I get too technical. So we're recording this on Tuesday, the 3rd of January. It'll probably go out on the 4th of January. So it'll be 3 days ago when this goes out. It was midnight on the 1st, wasn't it?
Yeah. And yeah, it's...
you reckon that's going to be huge?
Yeah, I do. It looked great. Everything happened. All the brands showed up.
Except one.
There was more than one who didn't show. There was a couple of brands that didn't show up. What was interesting about it as well is it's the Jake Paul better first date for them as well.
That so brand name is perfect to be said with an Irish accent.
But it's also, I think somebody in Australia has got the same name. So they there's have, like the yeah. Australian better and then there's the American better, which is pretty funny. It's early days. It's only been like, 72 hours, whatever, two, three days. But yeah, I think I'm right. But then the way this industry works, everybody's now looking at Massachusetts. Ohio's done, on to Massachusetts, which is going to be the next big one.
But what do you think is going to make Ohio so big?
It's got the... So there's a few things. A population size is... I can't remember off the top of my head. Ohio population, one sec. So you got 12 million people. So it's a decent size population state compared to a lot of the American states that have legislatures. They've also then got they've got a lot of pro sports teams. So NFL, NFL, like American football, basketball, baseball, and then the college teams as well are huge. So from a sports perspective, it's a very, very good state. So that was kind of the double whammy of lots of licenses, plenty of pro teams and college teams, plus decent population size.
Do you think like the Jake Paul thing, I mean, it's going to be super, super interesting. We'll probably never see the actual figures, but I wonder whether it's not just looking at him in terms of the cult of celebrity, it's the type of celebrity and how he's grown that celebrity. And I wonder if because of the difference there to your average sports star. I mean, his celebrity is all about engagement, visibility, and almost like perceived access, I suppose. I wonder if they are going to find a much lower bar to customer acquisition than others because of the nature of his celebrity.
I don't think so. So I think there's a couple of things here. One is...
The thing is, though, Fintan, nobody knows.
The beauty of it is all the states publish gambling data every month. So we will actually know in a few months. I think if you look at Barstool Sports is the other example, right? So you've got Barstool Sports, pretty, that started, like that is a gambling social media star is or social media brand, basically. Sports and betting is what they do, and they've done it for years, and they've built that hardcore loyal following.
I've done publishing for years, Fintan, it doesn't mean I'm any good at it.
But if you look at the Barstool, like the Penn Gaming Barstool numbers, market share numbers, like turning that huge online audience into actual customers, the market share numbers you see published by the different gambling organizers, the gambling regulators in America, would suggest it's not that big a deal. And I think if you kind of break it to, like, if I put my marketing manager hat on, if I was sit there and try and do a deal with Jake Paul as a brand, it's kind of like, okay, you've got however many billion followers online. That's great. How many of them live in states where gambling is legal? How many of them are actually over 21? How many, you know, and when you start breaking down the numbers, it's a bit like if you're trying to sponsor a Premier League team in the UK, right? They'll come to you with these massive social media numbers, right? And you're like, okay, now let's remove all of the countries we don't operate in. So all of Africa, straight away, that big social media number becomes a much smaller social media number. So I think when you're dealing with big global celebrities like this, really boiling down where the audience is, and those kind of like it becomes a much smaller number than you realize. And then if you say they skew younger, they're more kind of say parlay or accumulator type betting type people, you know, it's a $5 bet rather than a $500 bet. The player values and stuff as well come into question. So you like, if I was a gambling operator in the US, I really wouldn't be losing sleep from that perspective. I think the product piece, so what they were doing when we had people on to talk about this before, that kind of micro betting, I think that's correct. I think that will win, but that's just a product feature. Like if the numbers coming out of Ohio show any traction for the brand, micro betting, if it's not already on everybody's product roadmap, micro betting just gets moved straight to the top of their product roadmap. And by this time next year, everybody's got it. So I think their play is to find a brand that's desperate, who then overpays for the, but then in this market now, I don't think that works either because money's more expensive. Stock market doesn't care anymore. It just wants to see profitability. So I even think their kind of exit play isn't as good as they are. So my outrageous forecast would be that Jake Paul is out of the gambling business by the end of probably this year, but most likely next year.
Wow. Big words. If he wants to come on the podcast, he definitely can.
We'll give him exposure.
Yeah. But let's not forget, we'd be legitimizing him by bringing him on. I was looking at the earnings and more.
Oh yeah,
very newsletter. Well, we had one of them on.
We did.
He was very good.
Yeah.
But there was a bit in one the other day. It might have been a couple of days ago. And it was saying about that when I said there was an absentee, I was thinking of this because they make the point that Fanatics wasn't there.
Oh, that's right.
And that's very, very, that's a potential, well, dare I use the word, so beloved by so many press release issuing companies, could be a disruptor. Because they, as the CEO has suggested himself, they could potentially provide the greatest cross-loyalty program in sports because they have access to so much merchandise.
I think
has potential.
Yeah, but again, it's like if you think of intent, right? So I'm going in and I'm buying a baseball hat for my favorite baseball team or whatever. Like
you can tell us.
I don't see it. I think ESPN probably has the best potential crossover.
Well, I've been bigging up ESPN for ages, and you're all like, ESPN.
But ESPN will make more money just selling the advertising space than they will running their own gambling operation.
I think
for Fanatics, they would do way better, unless they're going to do something like. If they're just going to launch a sports book, I think it's already game over. No, if they're going to do something really clever,
What you suggested, and this is in Earnings and More, so I know you've read it because you're their biggest fan.
I am.
He's made a suggestion that every bettor might get a percentage of every bet returned to them, win or lose, to buy merchandise. Or if you're if you sign up to an account and you're in a LID store, you might get an order for free or whatever, or a percentage of an order for free. As he says, market access has been too expensive. I want to be patient. We don't want to be in a business we can't make $1 billion in. Now, in all likelihood.
But that's the right attitude. Dollars. Like the attitude's the right one, right? Let's not just do it at any cost. Let's make sure we're doing it right. You would assume they'd have tested this concept with customers.
What's so interesting about this and this attitude is that even if it's a losing bet, other aspects of the business gain. So it's kind of, it'd be super interesting to see the actual accounting of it. But I guess with the Jake Paul thing, you know, of course you're right. I mean, it comes down to where, who, how old those demographics actually are as to what their actual value is. You know, everybody's aware of this launch and all that shit, but how relevant is it? Anybody's guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know yet, and we won't know for a while. I mean, until the end of the year, possibly. And it's the same with this. It's like, because this hasn't been done before, I just want to see how it plays out.
Yeah, but it's also like, you know, we're talking about $30 baseball hats. Or
they are quite expensive.
You know, okay, they're slightly more expensive, but like if you think about the average order value of the merch, you know, assuming it's 50% profit margin, so let's say 100% profit margin, right? You know, your $20 bet gets you points for the store, drives footfall. There's potentially a model there, potentially. But then how often do you buy new jerseys? How often do you buy new baseball hats? There's definitely people who will buy them frequently. But you would assume it's a once a year new team jersey comes out, maybe as a gift as well. So maybe like you're looking at two or three orders a year.
But they're not generally. I appreciate you probably, you know, don't acknowledge things other than as sports team A and sport team B. But, you know, if you're buying a football shirt, et cetera, or a strip for your kid or whatever, it's quite a big ticket purchase these days.
They're definitely expensive. But even with, let's say it's $100 or a $200 order value, and I've just saved $10.
But loyalty programs are all, I'm not talking about casino loyalty programs, I'm talking about retail loyalty programs, are all shit because they're all about perceived value.
Mm.
The actual return on what you spend is fuck all.
Yeah.
And it's that perceived value that drives loyalty, which is complete fucking nonsense. I've seen people go around a cheaper petrol station. In fact, like my local butcher here, he was trying to supply one of the local rugby clubs. Great big rugby club quite close by. And they were like, oh yeah, so we had your meet in the club at the weekend. Everybody loved it. We're gonna buy from his Brake Brothers or somebody, you know, one of the big national chains. And he's like, okay, I don't get it. Is it, well, they give us nectar points. What's a fucking rugby club need nectar points for? What is the point? What? So you don't want the better quality stuff. You don't want to support a local business. You want fucking nectar points.
Yeah.
It's like, it's that perception that this is going to trade off. And that is the really interesting part. It doesn't have to actually deliver value. It's just going to seem like it.
I think this was a business plan made over a year ago when the stock market was frothy. DraftKings had a massive valuation. And somebody on their side went, oh, we can get a bit of that. All we need to do is launch a sports book. And I think they just haven't stopped to reconsider.
Well, maybe they can't. I mean, if they're on the stock market, maybe they've said it and they're like, oh shit, we've got to do it now.
I don't think they are. I think it's privately owned.
There's no excuse then.
I think.
Just waiting for Fintan to look it up.
Yeah, I think they're privately owned.
Well, look, I just think it's going to be interesting to see how all this shakes out, because there are new factors in there. It's not the same old shit now. So the other thing is, like you say about Jake Paul, he's been around in the online space for long enough that the bulk of his followers, et cetera, are going to be adults. Like actual ones.
Look, there'll be a lot of adults.
I'd say the bulk of them probably adults now.
A lot of people in their 20s. There'll be a lot of teenagers. And there will absolutely be, like, I'm not saying, but what it takes, it's a percentage game, right? So you start off with 100%, right? Okay. How many of them live in Ohio?
Right? 100%.
So straight away, it's like 5% of his audience lives in Ohio.
It's well known. 100% of his followers are in Ohio.
Right. Of those 5% in Ohio, how many are over 21?
100% of them.
And gamble or have an interest in gambling, right?
All of them.
So you end up with a much smaller number than when you started with. And that number will be smaller than
98%. That's what the number is.
And I think it's just a numbers game. It's just a funnel, and you sieve it and you end up with much gold. Smaller stuff than gold.
You end up with gold. It's diamonds. One of those.
They're all VIPs.
Hands that you shake in the river. It's one of those.
That's exactly what it is. There's a lot of mud and a lot of rocks and a lot of bullshit. And occasionally you get a VIP, pays for everything. So,
okay, good to know. But today's episode.
Oh yeah.
We are, and this ties into an earlier joke I made. When Fintan was talking about the anti-gambling lobby, our guest is not anti-gambling, but his name is Antti. We're joined by returning guest Antti Koivula. When was Antti on? When were you in?
He said August. He said the 8th of August or 9th of August.
So Antti joined us back in August to talk about the Finnish gambling monopoly, and there's been some really, really interesting news come out of Finland in just this past week. It's not going to have, well, part of it has short-term interest and another part has a longer-term interest, but Antti is his usual extremely knowledgeable, very articulate self, so it's well worth a listen. He also brings us up to date on how he's gotten on with his homework of watching Cobra Kai, and I got to say, you know, I'm very proud.
Yeah, he's really put in the effort there.
Yeah, he has. He's done a lot of – he's put in the miles. So listen to that. I mean, if you've listened to this, you might as well stay and listen to that, right? I mean, you got through the hard part. On to Antti. We join our first guest, the fantastically Finnishly named Antti Koivula. Antti, you're a legend on this podcast. Our previous episode with you was actually one of our most listened to episodes ever, so... Presumably, really? You must have a big family who all listen. Antti, you are partner stroke legal advisor at Legal Gaming. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Sean. And nice to see you, Fintan, as well.
Great to finally meet you, Antti.
Yeah, Fintan wasn't here last time because he was busy doing important stuff like being in Australia or some shit.
Pretty much.
I'm not bitter.
Unlucky of him.
He's never mentioned it.
I don't bring it. I don't like to crow about, you know, the things that I don't have. Well, apart from a nice home, a nice car, a quality of life. Well, this got depressing fast. Antti, I believe we set you some homework last time we spoke. How are you getting on with Cobra Kai?
Oh, pretty well, actually. I'm now in the middle of third season.
Come on.
So things are heating up. But I really have to say that I really enjoyed, you know, the first season the most this far, because, you know, that was kind of coming back from the memory lane and, you know, seeing how the everything has been mixed up and, you know, how things have developed in...
I think the first series is probably the funniest.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny just being such a complete waste of carbon. I might have to go back and watch the first season again. It was very, very good. Fintan, one of our listeners won a Cobra Kai t-shirt. Have they been sent that yet?
They haven't. I'll add it to my to-do list. Hang on a sec.
I think that would be a good idea. I've got a Cobra Kai t-shirt.
I know you do. Send Cobra.
It was a late birthday gift from Fintan, and it's got a swooping eagle on it. I laugh just thinking about it. I laugh while I'm wearing it. That's why I don't wear it when I'm, you know, with people.
You have to send a picture on social media with you wearing it.
That is a very good idea.
We'll organize t-shirts for ICE and we'll get a group photo. How about that?
Sounds like a plan. I'm coming to ICE as well, so
perfect.
I might join you for the photo.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'll organize a t-shirt delivery.
But what does my t-shirt say, Fintan? Do you remember?
Can't remember.
I believe it says "bite like an eagle."
That's right.
Which, of course, represents my spiritual dojo, which is Eagle Fang. Oh God! You still have this to look forward to, only being on season 3 as well, Antti.
Oh yeah, no spoilers.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, but I didn't say anything about Johnny dying, did I? Anyway. So, Antti, we've asked you back because it's been a big couple of weeks for Finland. I think it's fair to say. What's going on?
Well, let's just say that, you know, things have more or less developed in the way I was presuming them to have developed. Now there are really two fronts in which there's been development. There's first of all the kind of the supervisory side, and secondly the ongoing shift to the licensing system. So basically there's those two topics to cover us for today. So if I'll start with the first one, if you don't mind.
Rocket.
So PSP blocking, it started in Finland in the beginning of this year, so not too many days ago. Now it might sound a bit confusing as following this we will cover how the Finnish market is opening up in a few years. But you know, until that happens, the law is what it is, and we have to follow it. It's also worth noting that, you know, the decisions regarding the now started PSP blocking, those were made already some time ago, a few years ago. And back then, the government was still aiming to strengthen the monopoly system. So if you know, consider the situation from that perspective, it kind of makes more sense. Yeah. Now, the enforcement authority, the National Police Board or the NPB, they have made the blacklist of the operators whose payments must be blocked. And the blacklist, it's publicly available on NPB's website. Currently, the list is rather short, but as the NPB themselves announced in December, in last month, they have pending administrative proceedings also against other operators, and those might lead to blacklisting as well. Plus, it's extremely likely that more processes will follow in the near future. In fact, the NPB has been currently recruiting for more employees for their supervision duties, as they were promised considerable resources increase in the recent gambling law reform. They actually just had 5 new openings in which the time to apply ended on December 28th. So they will get those new resources soon. Now, regarding the NPB, what I've been hearing is that it's also getting interesting when it comes to affiliates, as the first prohibition order and conditional fine for a traditional affiliate is up and coming. It's kind of a big deal, as it's then rather easy to the NPB to clone the process and, you know, go after the rest of the affiliate field, which is, you know, after those who are targeting the Finns and Finnish market.
So what would that look like? Is that an IP blocking? Is it a a fine system, or what would it be for the affiliates?
For affiliates, it would be, prohibition order, basically cease and desist order, and then fines.
Got it. So when the Dutch tried to do this, it was quite hard to enforce, because if if the affiliate's not in Finland, right? How do you enforce it? What happens there?
Yeah, the enforceability of the fines is definitely a big question mark. It depends on the jurisdiction where the affiliate is located in. Hmm. But in that regard, you have to also consider that, you know, when it comes to affiliate marketing, the NPP considers that both the operator who is being marketed and the affiliate website who is, you know, carrying out the marketing activities, both are responsible of the possible law infringements. So, even if they would open cases against affiliates and they wouldn't be able to, you know, proceed with they wouldn't be able to enforce the fines against them, it would be easy for them to go after the operators next who've been, you know, advertised through that particular affiliate website. And obviously, you know, that wouldn't be good for the affiliate website's business.
No, because you'd imagine, obviously, going after because what happens then is it just gets, you know, the brands get less and less legitimate, probably the bad word, but, you know, you know they're not Maltese brands anymore. They're Curacao brands or they're crypto brands. So the brands that get advertised change. But you could imagine then the second topic you talk later on, like if there's a legislation process that could potentially happen, normally what happens as well then is there's a blackout period. So a lot of these operators you could imagine would be looking to withdraw.
That's definitely in the cards.
Yeah.
And I think we should hop straight to the next topic.
Before we go to the next topic, I want on the PSP blocking, I had a look through the list. And am I right in terms of there were mostly kind of lottery focused brands?
Basically on the current list, it's quite short, as mentioned. There's only two Curacao based operators. And I know there were 8 lines on the blacklist, but those are just, you know, listing the different brands of those two operators.
But I think those brands were mostly online lottery focused brands rather than.
Yeah, what they basically did, they were basically really aggressive in their marketing. They weren't, you know, traditional casino operators or anything like that. They were selling lottery subscriptions by phone. I guess they offer, you know, other gambling services on their website as well. But that's what they were doing in Finland. And, you know, even though, you know, someone would say no for the subscription, you know, they would get billed and, you know.
Oh, wow.
All that. That was,
okay, so it was super, super aggressive then. Okay.
Yeah, indeed. So they were the first ones to get blacklisted. I'm actually... I'm rather surprised that in the course of last year, the NPP wasn't able to proceed with the other ongoing cases too much. And I know for a fact that they are right now looking for example cases. It really makes the following cases much easier for them, because they can just, you know, do the same they've done with the example cases. But even with the ongoing cases, it was a bit of a surprise that, you know, they weren't able to proceed until the end.
Yeah, it's surprising. It I suppose it must be also quite nervous for a lot of operators, because Finland's quite a big, for a lot of brands, Finland's a big chunk of their revenue. So it's probably quite anxious times in a few boardrooms right now in terms of what's happening. Particularly if they get blocked before legislation happens and stuff, right? That's a big gap.
That's definitely not something advisable at this point. There's still a lot of question marks, but obviously when we are considering the legislative change, it's we'll come back to that later on. But for example, the Dutch model, the freezing out period, it's been discussed.
Which works if you pass. So where it went wrong in the Netherlands was it took them so long to pass the legislation. Yeah. So that starting point, so it became kind of a mockery of the system. So people who abided by the rules versus the guys who got like right up to the last minute over mm-hmm. like 5-6 years. So there was a huge discrepancy there on that. But yeah, you would assume there'd be a freezing out period or a tidying up of the market before you apply for licensing. That would be really important.
Yeah.
So okay, let's move on to the potential legislation changes then. What's going on there?
Okay, last time when I visited the Gambling Files podcast, it was August 9th, I believe, last year. And soon after that,
we'll take your word for that.
No, I actually checked that date. I had to recheck what I've already mentioned in the podcast, and I'm not gonna go over I'm not gonna exhaust you with the same.
That's okay.
Same
That's okay.
background information again. Well, let's concentrate on the latest developments. But anyway, following my last visit to the podcast in the end of August last year, the Veikkaus CEO stated in Veikkaus interim report that he stated that if the sharply declining trend of Veikkaus market share cannot be stopped, Finland will have to start thinking about bringing all gambling under the same regulatory system. So basically, Veikkaus CEO was strongly hinting that Finland should consider abandoning Veikkaus monopoly and switch to licensing system. Now, only a bit more than a week later, basically the same message was repeated by Veikkaus executive vice president in an interview, and he did it in a much more straightforward manner. He actually stated that Veikkaus is ready to give up its monopoly position, and basically he also talked positive things about the licensing system. That's rather exceptional, as Veikkaus C-level haven't exactly been known of their positive attitude towards any other system apart from the monopoly system, quite the vice versa. So these statements were rather huge, as it basically meant 180 degrees turn from Veikkaus, who happens to be also the one whose opinion tends to matter the most in Finland when gambling policy and gambling legislation is in question. So last time when I visited the podcast, I covered the terrible run Veikkaus have had in the past few years and how that had affected their and monopoly system support among the MPs and, among the general public as well. Also, we covered how the monopoly system had practically lost its greatest lobbying force, the thousands of beneficiaries, as the gambling proceeds will be in the future moved to the normal state budget procedure instead of being earmarked for the beneficiaries. So now that in the end of August and in the beginning of September, Veikkaus drew their support from their own monopoly, there really is not much support left for the status quo, and things started to move. Now, following these Veikkaus statements on September, the Social Democratic Party, which is the current Prime Minister party and the second biggest party according to the polls, their newspaper called Demokraatti published the results of a survey made for the parliamentary groups, according to which only one smaller party is a steady supporter of the monopoly system, while all the other parties were at least open to consider alternative options for the monopoly. Few weeks later, in the end of September, the National Coalition Party, which is currently a sizable forerunner in the polls to be the biggest party in the next April's parliamentary elections, they published their view according to which the monopoly should be dismantled during the next parliamentary term, so basically meaning between 23 and 27. This was quite a turn, though at this point, it seemed that not much can happen before the parliamentary elections of this April, as strengthening the monopoly system is the cornerstone of the gambling policy, and it's also written in the current government program. And also, you have to consider that the driving forces in the government, in the current government, are the left-wing parties who have traditionally been the strongest supporters of the monopoly system. But I must say that it was refreshing to be wrong that one time. But let's get to that in a bit. I'm also an active in the Finnish Gambling Association, which was formed in 21 by us Legal Gaming together with the Finnish Gambling Consultants. Our aim was to share expert information and facilitate discussion to develop the current gambling system in Finland. Now, it must be stated that we've made the decision to remain objective, meaning that we haven't welcomed any gambling operators, affiliates, or other interest groups as members of the Finnish Gambling Association. As from our perspective, it's of utmost importance that the change in Finland comes from within Finland, and you know, not from pressuring external actors. So we are not a trade organization, though there's been already some misunderstandings in that regard. Now, we held a discussion event in the end of November last year, and it was a great success. In the event, the most important Finnish stakeholders got to express their views regarding their direction in which Finland should be heading. And the MP guests got to ask questions from them and express their views as well. The event was also open for public, and many industry experts and others who are interested in the Finnish gambling system participated. As one of the MPs put it, the event itself proved that there is a widespread agreement among the interest groups and also among the participating MPs about the direction in which Finland should head. Now the question was just when the change to the licensing system takes place. One of the expert speakers put it later on in a great, he said that our event likely contributed on speeding up the change and had an effect on what was coming up. We also covered some characteristics worthwhile considering in the upcoming Finnish licensing model. For example, as mentioned, the Netherlands cooling off period was where that's to born. There were talk about whether B2C and B2B licenses should be introduced simultaneously. We discussed about the marketing risk restrictions, responsible gambling features, and blacklisting was also among the dots that were discussed. But anyway, we really got to help this great event for the decision makers. And soon after, the next twist took place in just after Christmas, so really recently. First, the Social Democratic Party, they announced that the party is ready to consider the licensing model, and they went on listing the obvious reasons why it makes sense. The first announcement was made by one of the SDP's current ministers, and only 3 years ago, she stated in a straightforward manner that the way of Sweden is under no circumstances appropriate for Finland. And further, that Finland must not allow a situation where foreign gambling companies would come here and we would drift to the licensing system. So considering that as well, this was quite a change in tone from the minister herself and the party. But, you know, even more was to follow. On December 29th, so what is it, like a week ago, less than a week ago, another SDP minister publicly confirmed that the Finnish government is officially ready to abolish the gambling monopoly. The minister stated in a really straightforward manner that the following is a direct citation. There is a unanimous view within the government on abandoning Veikkaus monopoly on digital games. She also stated that she had rushed to start the study on the licensing system, which obviously have to be done before, you know, there's going to be any legislative work done or so forth. We haven't really gone through, or Finland hasn't done any studies regarding the licensing system and, you know, what would be the best way to implement it in Finland and all that. It's always been just monopoly, monopoly, monopoly. Anyway, now she stated that she had rushed to start the study, and this practically means hastening the change to licensing system roughly by 6 months, if not more. And all this was quite some news, as you know, as I mentioned, the current governmental program, the cornerstone is that the monopoly system is being strengthened. That's the starting point. And even as that's the case, the Finnish government had decided not only to support the chains, but also to hasten it.
Yeah.
So that was quite some news. I wasn't personally expecting that. I was really, really expecting them to follow the government's program, and you know, and in that case, we would have had to wait until the next April's parliamentary elections, and things would have just started to move.
Because normally what happens is, oh yeah, we want to do this, and then it takes a few years before anything really starts. So the kind of the incumbents can kind of milk the system for the next few years. So it's really surprising that it's so quick. Now, just one question. So a couple of questions on this. So one is, you said digital games. So do you think so that will be casino and sportsbook, online casino and sportsbook, or just online casino? Yeah,
that's what's under the discussion right now. It's but there obviously no decisions have been made. But what the politicians are discussing right now is that monopoly will remain on physical casinos and physical slot games and on retail
level. Okay, so all the land-based stuff would stay under monopoly, and this is really just about licensing the online business, which is currently not being taxed. Outside of the monopoly activity, right? So that makes sense.
There's also, I see that the most likely scenario as well, but obviously there's been some talks whether, Finland should license all, gambling branches, including the offline, the retail market as well. But currently that doesn't look like the most likely scenario.
No. Well, yeah, you could, I suppose, with 20 jobs. Would probably be a big factor on that, I would guess, as well. And from the online perspective, then, is there because obviously, like, every country does it completely differently. So, like, is there any thoughts around tax or no bonusing or kind of these types of restrictions or kind of areas where it maybe makes it not so attractive?
Obviously there hasn't been, decisions made about the details yet, but it looks rather likely that Finland will look after Sweden most of all. That's pretty much what always happens. And now I know that's a swear word for quite a few people on the industry, the Swedish market hasn't really been praised that much among.
It's coming back, though. It's coming back.
There's definitely lots of good in it as well, but I'm not going to go to that right now. But anyway, in the Finnish Gambling Association's event, we discussed about this matter as well, and it was quite clear that, Finland will mostly look after, the Nordic neighbors, especially Sweden and Denmark.
I think Denmark's a good model. I think that's probably
I must agree with you. It's perhaps, it would be perhaps the best model for Finland to follow.
Yeah.
But obviously, under the discussion are other characteristics from other systems as well, as mentioned, the cooling off period and how that could be, implemented in Finland. Obviously, if Finland will choose to include that, it's not going to be exactly same as was in the Netherlands. But it's gonna be, something on the line.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And also, as mentioned, the B2B licensing, whether it's gonna be implemented at the same time with B2C, that's under the discussion as well, among other things. When it comes to taxation and there really hasn't been that much detailed discussion regarding that. That as of yet, personally, unfortunately, I'm a bit pessimistic in this way, and I believe that the taxation rate might be, more likely or higher than lower.
Mm.
But we'll see about that.
But then it's such a lucrative market, any tax is better than, yeah. I think there's, I think they could probably get away with probably more in some markets. Yeah.
This is not really a point of comparison, but you know that for years the tax rate for gambling, obviously it only applied to Veikkaus and to Puff at certain extent. It used to be 12%, but during the COVID, they actually lowered it to 5.5 and then to 3.4, and now it's 5.0. And in the beginning of 2024, it's going to return to 12.0%, if I can recall. But I don't think this is an indication of the tax rate that's going to be applied on the license market. Just mentioning the current tax base.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, yeah, it's 12 is kind of fine, I think. I'm not a tax expert on these things with the numbers, but I think 12 is kind of in the, you know, everybody can make money off. Yeah, I think everybody can make money on that, which is ideally what you want. Otherwise, you end up with a Sweden situation where it's just still being served by a black market, despite the legislation. And then I suppose for if you look at the future for Vegas, I presume that the template then would be like a Svenska Spel or a Danske Spel, where you had the historical state monopoly, who still ends up being a huge player in a regulated market just because of brand and longevity. And if they've maintained the land-based business, there's a huge amount of crossover there as well. And the retail footprint would really help. Yeah, so you'd still expect a strong Vegas post-legislation, would be my guess.
Yeah, I agree. And that's exactly the reason why Veikkaus came out with the statements during last autumn, and why the politicians and other interest groups are right now hurrying this matter. It's that they want to keep, you know, Veikkaus competitive, and Veikkaus is losing market share as we speak at an alarming rate. The longer the switch or the change to licensing regime takes, the lower market share Veikkaus will have in the upcoming licensing system.
It's a really interesting point, because if I was sitting there as like the marketing guy at Veikkaus, if I'm losing market share, we then introduce legislation, which means a bunch of new brands enter the market. They'll all enter the market with ramped up advertising, which historically they haven't been allowed to do. Mm-hmm. That doesn't solve my market share problem at all. What's Veikkaus hoping to get out of this?
I can't recall if we discussed this in depth the last time, but basically, what I think Veikkaus wants is they want the same restrictions to apply for their competitors regarding, you know, marketing and responsible gambling and this and that. You know, they recognize the fact that, you know, internet is already filled with, you know, the advertisements of foreign gambling operators, and there's not that much to be done with that. Obviously, we got the PSP blocking starting, but it's
a game of cat and mouse, that.
It's just gonna change the brands who are advertising more and so forth. It's not gonna help them too much. And I believe they were really hoping for, you know, different kind of legislative change. They were hoping for stricter blocking system, and now the PSP blocking only it doesn't include all foreign operators. It only includes those against whom the NBB has imposed a prohibition order based on illegal marketing. And even regarding them, it only includes the ongoing transfers from Finland to those blacklisted operators. So it's far from, you know, exhaustive,
which is why then you would argue you need the B2B licensing to happen at the same time, because, you know, if NetEnt is licensed as an example, but then there's a NetEnt game appearing on a unlicensed brand targeting Finland, it's much easier to go after NetEnt than it is to go after the unlicensed brand somewhere else in the world, right? So bringing the providers into the net is probably a more effective offshore, but more effective blocking of the offshore brands as anything.
And regarding Veikkaus Rationale, we already discussed this last time, but Veikkaus has been losing so much market share, and the base has been just increasing. Currently, they only have roughly 50% of the online market, and it's coming down some 7 percentage points per year.
Okay, so it's a race to the bottom then. If they have to do something. Okay.
If you count also the retail market in which Veikkaus has 100% market share, that they have, was it 66 or 67% right now, and the base has been pretty much the same. During last year, they lost some, I don't remember the exact figure, but it was between 6 and 7 percentage points. So it was quite a lot. Yeah. And if you only consider those gambling products that they are now discussing to be under the license, so you know, fixed odds sports betting online and the casino games, Veikkaus has the market share is even lower. It's how much was it? I believe it was roughly 20% on fixed odds sports betting and maybe on the area of 40% when it comes to online casino games.
Oh, okay, so
cannot really, you know, lose that much market share anymore. But it's going down.
And from a government perspective, then if my state monopoly is not bringing in the tax revenue, I have to issue licenses to go get all that revenue back, or to get us.
Yeah, interestingly, the reason why Finland has the official reason why Finland has gambling monopoly is to prevent gambling related harm. That's the official reason how we've justified it under the EU law. It's the fiscal reasons can't be a reason to justify gambling monopoly under EU law. Obviously,
can I just jump in here? Sure. I appreciate I've been very quiet, but that's because I've been learning. I think that is the greatest justification I've ever heard for a gambling monopoly ever. You don't need single customer view. You don't need single customer wallet. You don't need any of that shit. Just have one operator.
Mm.
Genius.
But what's funnier about it, though, is if you actually visit Finland and you walk into a grocery store, there's slot machines again. Like, it's like Vegas in terms of there's slot machines in the newsagents.
Every street corner, everywhere you can go. They have now reduced the number of slot machines, but it has basically meant that previously, you might have had, you know, 8 slot machines in a big supermarket. Now you might only have 4, but they are, you know, next to the cashier and everybody can see them. And you know, there used to be slot machines in retirement home cafeterias, in hospital cafeterias. I don't think that's the case anymore. But that used to be the situation just a few years back.
If somebody from Veikkaus is listening, right, I've got an idea that, and I don't even need a royalty for this. This is just an area of untapped potential for slot machine installations above the urinals in men's toilets.
That's an interesting idea.
You'd be having a pee, and if it's in a pub, it could be quite a long pee. Then you'd be like, oh, look, I've got a couple of euros or whatever. I just... ding, ding. And if you win, the urinal gets flushed as well.
Until there's like a queue of people for the urinals and there's chaos in the bathroom because some guy just won't give up his spot.
Yeah, because his machine's running hot.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, seriously, you know, nowadays at least we have the compulsory identification in the physical slot machines. That didn't used to be the case, and you know, when it comes to the age supervision, you know, it really hasn't been working. We don't have to go back too many years, and you know, there were, you know, studies and reports made that the age supervision in the slot machines worked like 10% per times. So 90% of the times it wasn't working. Or roughly
all my Finnish friends have stories about gambling at 12 on these machines. like
even lower,
putting their sport, their footy accumulators for the weekend or something, or something like that. They've all got these stories.
The 18 years age limit, it's been around for some 10 years now. Before that, the age limit was 15, but you know, no one really cared. It was just, you know, money for the shopkeeper and money for the vehicles, and you know, Finland is really filled with gambling related stuff, and Veikkaus is really getting a lot of, you know, free marketing space. And so you cannot, if you, for example, look at the Veikkaus marketing budget, you cannot really compare it with, let's say, the Swedish marketing budget in any sense. Because in Finland, Veikkaus is visible in every single grocery store. There's really a lot of marketing stuff in every single grocery store, petrol station, pubs, you name it. And Veikkaus is not paying officially, you know, anything for the marketing done in those places. Obviously, they pay for, you know, they pay commission, and that's kind of that's the way how they pay out the marketing done in those places. But officially, it's not, you know, under the heading of, you know, marketing expenditure.
But so look, this is super fascinating. What in terms of timelines then? So you said that everything's accelerated. What the ministers are saying, it would actually happen within this government cycle.
Yes.
So we're kind of looking at 6 months sooner.
Everything hasn't. If the government will now keep up their word and will start the examination phase and start the, you know, the study about the licensing system, everything will speed up roughly by 6 months. It really depends, but on that area. So as earliest, we could have a licensing system in the place in the beginning of 2025. So last time I said I think that will happen in the beginning of 2025, in the beginning of 2026, but now there's been, you know, some positive developments in that front, and it might happen even earlier. Now, when you mentioned that, you know, maybe the Netherlands style cooling off period is not, you know, the perfect model, and you know, there's been obviously some room for improvement in Sweden as well. That the thing I'm most worried about the upcoming change is that the Finnish legislator and the persons in charge are not really known to listen, you know, the experts when it comes to gambling. It's been always just the voice of Veikkaus and their beneficiaries who've been basically heard. So this time I really, really, really hope from the bottom of my heart that, you know, this mistake will not be repeated, and, you know, real experts will be heard, you know, regarding the characteristics which should be, you know, included in the system. Agreed. Hopefully that happens, but I tend to be optimistic over a lot of things, but with this, I cannot say I'd be overly optimistic. Hopefully I'm wrong though.
Yeah. Well, it would make sense. There's a consultation process, and, you know, they invite lots of people in to talk at least, and get their point across. The Dutch were very good at that. It was lots of talking. Not a lot of action.
So I've heard.
good stuff. Thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Antti, thank you for educating us again.
And thanks for the spoilers, John.
I didn't mention
my last visit to the podcast.
I didn't say anything about Daniel catching fire. None of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, but thanks. Thanks for joining. Thanks for bringing us up to date. And it's so fresh. It's so current that I can understand your excitement, because you've got this kind of, ooh, something's going to happen. But that's obviously going to be tempered, because now you've got that long bureaucratic process.
Yeah, but you know, the situation in Finland has been and was stagnant for quite some time. So I, you know, now it seems there's, you know, happening a lot of things. You know, the new law entered into force in the beginning of last year, and you know, the PSP blocking starting now. The NDD getting new resources, and now the licensing system is you know, the plans have been pushed forward, and you know, all that. So
it's a great time to be a Finnish gambling lawyer. Absolutely golden age. He'll be fine.
I must agree.
He'll be fine.
I bet you next time Antti comes on, he's going to have like gold grills on his teeth and stuff.
The throne.
And he'll have like his massive rings and that, load of chains.
And he'll have earned every penny of it. It's going to be a lot of work.
Maybe
over the
next
couple
of years. A video podcast the next time.
If you get a tattoo on your face, we'll do a video podcast. It's nice. a very fair swap. Maybe not. I'll get my coat. Antti, thank you. We will catch up next time we catch up.
Yeah, thanks, Antti.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.